Welcome to the Urban Uncovered podcast, where we discuss science and science-based tools for everyday life. I'm Aya Tarabain. I'm a translational neuroscientist and a researcher at University College London. Also want to emphasize that this podcast is separate from my other roles. It's part of my desire to promote open science communication to the general public. In keeping with this theme, I would like to introduce you to today's guest, which is Dr. Mazdak, a senior scientist at JSK. Dr. Mazdak, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you here.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for taking this time.
Anytime. We would love to know a little bit about your early days. So what inspired you to pursue the path that you're currently on?
So it's a very good question. I think from my early days, I did a biochemistry degree at Surrey University. Mm-hmm. It was a year that I really enjoyed my life, but I was really unclear on future goals and future career pathways at that time. Mm-hmm. But I felt as though doing a master's would increase my chances of having higher leadership-based careers in the future. So I did a master's in pharmacology at King's College London. Main reason why is because I was very invested in understanding how drugs mediate therapeutic efficacy in the clinic, and eventually, you know, hopefully getting marketed for patients to use the drug. So I didn't really have a really good grasp of how drugs work, and that led me to the master's course. And then after the master's course, I knew I wanted to pursue a PhD. And at that time, I wasn't really clear of which PhD as well, because overall, you know, when you invest in a few years in a specific topic, you do want to go in an area that you have a lot of interest in. So I did work at UCL. One in Institute of Pharmacology and one in Institute of Neurology as an RA, and I felt as though that provided a good platform to both have the technical side skill sets and the also the knowledge to then pursue a PhD. And luckily I obtained a scholarship for King's, where I elicited the functions of a novel nested encoding gene, and also did do some collaboration work, some line management work. So yeah, that's sort of my early days. Gone too much into that's sort of in a summary of my background. Yes.
All right. And how exactly did you end up as a senior scientist at JSK? So
I've always wanted to work within the pharmaceutical industry. I felt as though going for the academic route first would be more of a beneficial pathway for me to go into. Mm-hmm. So I did my PhD and I did a postdoc as well. But at that time, I wasn't really clear on the objectives of how to answer certain questions, for example, in an interview in a senior scientist role in the pharmaceutical industry. And from my experience, I realized it's very different to interviews in academic background. So it's sort of when you start having an interview for an industry role, you realize, in fact, you don't know much about industry, and it sort of drives you to go and do a lot of research and to reach out on people from LinkedIn, for example, that do work in industry and do a certain job that you want to essentially obtain in the near future. So yeah, that's sort of what I did. And that got me to where I am at the moment. Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. So what you did really was reach out to people that were already in the industry and have had the experience that you would like to gain. So was it some form of mentorship that you sought after? Is that how?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So I think in an academic environment, mm-hmm. You're in is that there's not much advice or help in sort of going into other career paths outside academia. So it really comes down to you yourself reaching out, you knowing what you want to be doing. You know, there are a lot of PhD qualified jobs out there, and it doesn't have to be specifically within R&D as senior scientists. There are, you know, clinical trials, medical affairs, loads of other department, product management. There is consultancy firms that require PhD qualified scientists. So there are a lot of other avenues. But I think what I did was I sort of wanted to understand what the employer wants as a senior scientist. And to know, and of course communicate that in a concise way to both for applying for the job and for of course an interview. Yeah,
of course. I mean, your position as a senior scientist, to anyone that hears that, it sounds amazing, right? I mean, we would really love to know what a day in your life really looks like.
Day in life is really exciting. So what I do is I spend a good proportion of the time in the lab, where I investigate essentially the functional readouts of the pipeline of drugs that we have, not just the functional part. We can look into affinity and potency. So the idea is really when it comes to, I didn't really mention what I do currently, but I work within the biopharm department in GSK. So we essentially develop the antibody pipelines in various different diseases. So our main focus is on cancer, on chronic inflammatory diseases, infectious diseases. And the idea is to triage thousands of clones of antibodies into just one selected clone that has high potency and high affinity and high efficacy in a specific disease. So yeah, you need to really look into a lot of parameters such as the toxicology part, the pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics, the in vivo, in vitro, characteristics of the antibody. There's a lot of questions. It's far more complicated. I'm sort of new in within the department, but it's incredibly exciting to have a hands-on experience on how this drug eventually gets into clinic. So what we do is we work in the lab, we provide evidence proof of concept of, you know, how good this certain drug is and how translationally relevant it is to that disease. And eventually, once we have that, we then send it to the clinic. So that's genuinely the whole idea of what we do. And of course, there's sometimes, some of the time involves meetings where you have project meetings, where you update on the project development side. You work on multiple different projects. You sometimes have experience of line management of junior staff members. And you sort of haven't, let's say you would have some sort of opportunity to bring in new strategies into the team, new ideas that maybe the senior members don't have. And in that sort of collaborative team working environment, we try to sort of keep up with the market with the other competitors out there and not really, you know, lose out. That's the sort of the work we do. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you mentioned something about the competitors, and it would be really interesting to know, with your busy schedule, how do you manage to stay ahead of the curve? How do you remain at the forefront in a way?
It's a very good question. I think planning what work you do per week, way in advance. So when you go into your Monday to Friday workplace, you know exactly what you're doing at what time. This enables you to do multiple different tasks in a very short manner without really being, you know, overwhelmed with the work and being stressed and overstretched. So that's one thing I do. Second thing I do is, and of course my fellow work colleagues do as well, we sort of are always curious about new technologies and new literature out there that's sort of linking, you know, a specific protein to this disease of interest. And having increased knowledge of what's out there and what's been discovered, and sort of keeping up to pace and giving these and communicating this to the team. And I think the main difference between industry and academia is, in industry it's very team oriented workplace, so you all work together. You have your own responsibilities, and you just have to keep on top of everything of the project development side. So it's very different to academia. Academia is more, it's your own work. You're given this, you know, hypothesis, and you have to find data that then, you know, that then gets published in a peer-reviewed journal. Whereas in industry, it's completely different. It's you're a small part of a big project, but that small part is still very important. You know?
Of course.
That's sort of to answer your question. Yeah.
No, that's you put it together beautifully. It would be really interesting to know why. Because you did a postdoc, so why did you not pursue an academic career?
It's a very good question. So I was also curious to going into lectureship positions, mm-hmm. and professorship in 10, 20 years down the line. But I felt as though the work I was doing and to be able to then publish in high impact factor journals wasn't sort of a guarantee to get a lectureship or a higher position, and I could see that with my fellow colleagues. I felt as though it provided some sort of difficulty. There are a lot of positive aspects of academia. For example, if you're curious about a certain thing, you can go and do the experiment, right? You can just go and do it and see, and that's usually how the best breakthroughs happen. It's when you probably get home and you go to the shower and you think of something that you don't usually think of, and you think outside the box and you go and do the experiments, and you know, you've got a couple of years of funding, you can go and do it, you can then probably discover something very novel and impactful. But when it comes to the competition of being able to publish in high impact journals, it's not just one, you need multiple. And then you're still probably not guaranteed a lectureship. So that sort of discouraged me from continuing in the academic pathway.
I mean, obviously there are pros and cons to each, and it's a very subjective matter. It goes back to the individual themselves and their priorities. So
exactly.
Definitely. It would be really interesting to know because going back to your PhD as well, because you deciding to get one made a huge difference into the trajectory of your career. What do you think? What opportunities are available for PhD holders that really would not be available for someone with a master's degree?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think when I did my master's, the reason why I wanted to pursue a PhD is because the jobs that I want to be doing in the future requires a PhD, right? Mm-hmm. So it all depends on an individual. You know, if you know and you're set on a goal on going to a specific career path that does not require a PhD, I would personally recommend not going for the PhD route because if the job you want to do doesn't require one, then in my view, it's probably better to spend 3-4 years having some workplace somewhere else rather than going for the academic route or doing a PhD. So it depends on your goals. For me personally, it's for future career positions that does require a PhD. So that's what made me go through that route rather than the master route. Yes.
Okay, that's great to know. And where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years?
It's a good question. I don't know if my work colleagues are listening to my conversation, but I would say definitely to progress within the department I am in. I'm really enjoying the team I'm working in, the projects that are in line. So, maybe have more of a leadership-based leadership-based roles in the future. That's sort of what I see myself doing, but obviously there's other plans that I have in mind that are also outside of R&D, but within the pharmaceutical industry. So I think with every individual, I think it's maybe, you know, plan A might not work out, so there can be other plans as well. So that's what I see myself doing in the next couple of years.
I believe, well, I've known you for a couple of months. I believe a leadership role would suit you from your approach and style. But I think my listeners would love to know what principles do you follow to lead by example, and why would you want a leadership role to begin with?
So I think as I'm getting a bit older and having more slightly more experience, I feel as though having the people skills is so important, not just, how much you know about a specific topic or, how many ideas you can bring. I think being able to understand individuals' background and the way they would like to work and what motivates them, I think having a very strong partnership relationship with everyone within the team is something that I didn't really think of before, and I think that's one key principle to have towards a leadership position, because when we want to develop a product and send it to a clinic, it's not just a one person work, it's a team environment work, and you have to incorporate your skills that you have, but also utilize other expertise within your team at the best way possible, I think. And having a very strong relationship within your team is incredibly important to do so. So I think that's one key principle towards more of a leadership based role. So yeah, people skills is very important. Yes, I would definitely say that's something that I didn't know before.
I think anyone that, for example, starts off with an academic with their academic role really does neglect the people skills, especially because you do spend a lot of time either with your team in the lab or and if you were to get lucky, you would be interacting with people in conferences or maybe with like a 5-minute thesis presentation, let's just say. So people skills do go neglected, but I think nowadays we are having these workshops and the seminars, and so that these do help. If so let's just say you have attained that leadership position and you are in the process of building your team, what would your ideal team look like and what sort of qualities would they have?
I haven't really thought of that. That's a really interesting question. I think you having a team of diverse sets of background of knowledge and expertise could be key. It might be, we're working on the exact same sort of projects, but overall, I think if everyone has a different idea, and not everyone having from the exact same sort of of experience in the lab. So, for example, someone pure pharmacologist, which is what we do, is important. It's fundamental. But having some sort of other skill sets, so someone having some CRISPR work or other therapy areas that the pharmaceutical company might be interested in working in. I think having a combination of different skill sets is very important. Having very ambitious people, I think I personally, if I get to that position, which I'm not far from it, I would like to have a team of really ambitious and talented individuals. I think that's the key ingredient to outpace the competitors overall. I think because I worked in AstraZeneca before, I think the philosophy of the work culture is different per department. So yeah, I think the totality is key. I think that's what drives differences really, and the work ethic, I think, as well. I don't want to sound like a how do I describe it, a very strict person, but I think when it comes to a business environment where there's so many new pipelines and so many new ideas, and having that key drug that has highest impact on patients' need is what would differentiate the company you're working for and other companies. So yeah, that's sort of how I would answer that question.
We've been talking a lot about success and building a career, but we all have failures or maybe a bit of setbacks. Do you it would be really interesting to know how has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success?
Oh wow, yeah. Where do we start with failure? So in science, yeah, a lot of work ends up with failures. But failures doesn't necessarily mean as though you failed in your objective. It's more to do with the hypothesis and the idea you have. And you when you do the experiments, when you do find evidence, you realize that actually, what you thought is the case is actually not the case. So I don't see it as a failure. I think it's just providing those gaps that we don't know, and we then know that this is not relevant to this disease, or this isn't relevant to this cell system. So yeah, this happens a lot in science, and if it does happen, I think it's very important to be resilient and not lose focus and interest. And I think it's just really important to keep going and provide, solutions constantly. For example, if something doesn't work, your essay doesn't work or anything like that, there has to be a reason why. So there's always ideas to bring in, and it's best to discuss it with your team and figure out what the best strategies are within a short period of time, because that saves both time and money, right? So this is something that happens a lot. It's happened in a lot of places I've worked. So yeah, it's but you have to provide evidence again. Why hasn't your experiment worked? Is it the cell system? Is it the technology doesn't give you the results that you require? Maybe you have to think outside the box and use different strategies to answer the key question that you have. So yeah, this is very, very common. And yeah, this happens a lot in science, unfortunately. But it's just that's the but that's the key that's the exciting thing about science, is when you find the solution, and you realize actually, if you go for another avenue and you then provide the solution, it's far more exciting feeling to have once you've solved it and you discuss it with the team. So yeah, it can be very exciting at the end. Yeah.
No, that's I definitely agree. I mean, if you were to think about it, failure is not really a failure. It's not a dead end. It's more like a stepping stone. And then if you're, it kind of gives you a chance to maybe refine your approach, as you mentioned, question your assumptions, or explore another alternative avenue that was just not there. It was maybe in the blind spot somewhere.
Precisely, precisely.
But yeah, especially in science.
Yeah, definitely so. Definitely.
Definitely. We have bombarded you with a lot of questions, and before we let you go, it would be lovely to know what advice would you give to a bright, driven student that is looking to pursue a career as a scientist? And what advice do you think they should ignore?
Oh, okay. And advice that they should ignore. Interesting. I think as a scientist, what do you want to do? What therapy area do you want to go? If it's specifically if the scientist wants to stay as a scientist, is what do you think is the key question is, what do you think will be, the new niche or the new breakthrough in medicine development, right? So there's a lot of questions. At the moment, CRISPR is quite a hot topic, being able to genetically edit diseases, and essentially, in theory, we can cure hereditary diseases. So yeah, it depends on the question. It depends on what avenue the scientist is interested in, and sort of apply for those roles that are in line with what interests them. And sorry, the second question was advices that they should ignore. I think everyone should take into account what everyone says. I think ev everyone's because ev everyone within our career path has their own specific experience. I think it's important to l listen to what career path to go into, what an advantage or a disadvantage, and sort of take everything into account and see what makes you happy, overall. And yes, it's a hard question, because I think avoiding negative I think probably avoiding negativity could be helpful, because if you avoid negativity, and that could encourage you to stay focused on what you want to do in your career and to go up. So avoiding negativity, but never, ever, ever ignore negative feedback. I think negative feedback is incredibly important because everyone, you know, has flaws. No one's perfect. So to improve in your career is always to take any feedback, if it's negative or positive, and work on it, right? And develop it. So, for example, if a feedback comes out as saying, I don't know, you know, you could do better in this, you're doing great in this, but could do better, it's better than to focus your point of view on you know, on the negative feedback. And I think that's the key to going up, I think. I'm not the person to say that because I'm nowhere near, you know, I'm not qualified to say such things, but that's from my experiences. From a career development point of view, is, yeah, not to ignore everything and to understand why certain people, you know, line managers or some people that are invested in your career development, why they're saying certain things, and, you know, you got to work on it, and that's what makes you a better scientist, I would say. Yeah.
I guess you can approach it from a place of curiosity, right? So. You can, that's key sometimes to your both professional and personal growth in a sense. But that's excellent advice. So thank you. If I was to sum it up, please do correct me. So some advice that you would really give students is to prioritize learning and adaptability, right? Be able to embrace failure as part of the learning process itself. Build your network. So don't neglect the soft skills, and you need to balance passion and practicality when you're trying to build that career path. And you know, you got to take risks, but be thoughtful at the same time, right?
Oh, definitely, definitely, definitely. And one other thing that I want to mention is that it's great to be curious and enthusiastic, but then what I realized is you cannot physically do so many things within a short period of time. We have to be far more strategic on what is the best work to do within a short period of time. That's another key ingredient of success within industry. And that's definitely different to academic. You can go and do all those experiments that you're thinking of, but in industry, you're in a team environment. you need to think of the best.
In terms of career positions, how do you come to decide which path to pursue when there are multiple interesting and desirable paths to go for? So,
it's a very interesting question. I think it's to do with luck. I think it's to do with the demand on that in that time. So, for example, when I did my PhD, I did it in cardiovascular, thinking, you know, that's the biggest killer. That's the most of my investment pharmaceutical company. And at that time, that's what I thought. But when you look at the therapy areas in industry, it's far more invested in immunology and oncology. So things change rapidly. Technology changes rapidly. So I think the fate of what's important really can decide your career positions. Also, if you suddenly land in a position where you love the work and you know you love the team and you love the projects, you would most likely probably stay and develop into higher positions within that department. So I think it's a combination of a lot of factors. This demand, it's your private life as well. Maybe, you know, in your private life, you probably can't move around jobs as easy, especially when you have to support a family and you have family members. But when you're, you know, single, you know, the world's your oyster, really. You can go anywhere. So, it depends on a lot of factors. But, I think that's the main highlight.
Of course. I guess from what you're saying here is, like, it's you do encourage people to do a lot of self-reflection and ask themselves a few questions and not to be really distracted by whatever noise is around, right? Especially because nowadays you're faced with that paradox of choice, not just with your career, but with every single aspect of our lives, right? even when it comes to grocery shopping, to the, I mean, it's to that extent. So try to limit your options down, eliminate, right? It's the elimination
Precisely,
process. Okay. Okay, that's terrific. Well, this brings us to the end, of the episode. Now, because this is part of the career series, I had to really tame myself down and not ask any questions about your ongoing research. So we hope to have another episode to have you back on the show where we get to discuss that. Any matters that could be discussed, of course.
definitely, definitely. I would love to. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming to the show, Dr. Mazdak. It's an honor to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Anytime. And for all you listeners out there, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to tune in next time for more captivating conversations with excellent scientists and brilliant minds. Remember to stay curious and please leave us a review wherever you find the show, on Apple or Spotify. And we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
In your podcast and listening to your podcast can have such a benefit on people's lives, I think. And the fact that you do this is you have to understand how important what your work is and how impactful it can be for individuals in our career path. So no, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you taking me on board in your podcast. I think your podcasts are very interesting. I've just listening tuned in into a lot of your talks, and you've interviewed a lot of very interesting individuals with very, a lot of expertise in their areas. And yeah, it was really interesting to know the topics that you were discussing. And yeah, how to describe it, that's my hobby. I like to always learn new things. So I think within your podcast, you learn so much in such a short period of time. And the
Thank
quick key
you.
questions you ask are, very important. And the way you present yourself and discuss it is so, yeah, it's so easy for the reader to get interested in and sort of, listen to your podcast.
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I'm learning as much as they are. Trust me. But thank you so much for the compliments. Thank you for the compliments, and I would appreciate any feedback as well. Any room for improvements would be highly appreciated if, highlighted.